the balance of the unsegregated tax account, apply a interest return or rate towards that account and calculate out what the interest is on those monies. We then take those dollars and distribute them using the tax ratios that are distributing the current taxes and providing the interest to those districts using those tax percentages and whatever the current interest earning was for a given month. And that goes to all districts. We're basically following in our county what the court is ordered. We started that in June of 84.
Mr. Chairman, I think the point being that as soon as possible, maybe a couple of days to do the checks or whatever, but as soon as possible, they are earning interest. That money does go back to the individual taxing districts as it's earned through that distribution formula. And I just don't see, once the money's placed in the account, there's a problem.
Okay, Representative Clory, and then what I'd like to do is to move to the second issue, have Representative Hostick explain the second issue, and then we can examine both of them together in deciding how we want to move on those two unresolved issues. Representative Clory?
To share with the committee, I heard this gentleman say that they have, in his county, have come to a procedure that says that it takes too long to make copies of checks, and so we are in fact having them sit around for a period of time while we get to them. And I just gotta say that I question that. For instance, and I'm gonna sound like an IBM salesman for a minute, but there are in fact machines that are used at both U.S. Bank and First Interstate Bank that will read and photocopy, front and back, and with a accompanying deposit slip, 150,000 documents an hour. Now, you know, to say that it takes too long to make photocopies when you're feeding them in one at a time of 75,000 documents is probably correct. I just wonder who's really tried to solve the problem. Has anybody gone to these banks and said, you know, we'll give you $100, will you photocopy 150,000 checks for us? Put them in for our, you know, into our account, and then give us something we can work with? Or are they sending the money to those banks and saying, as a part of the deposit, will you make us an extra copy of those photostats? So I'm just not convinced that we can't do a better job, and that's precisely my point.
Mr. Chair, I have to call you.
Representative Hugo?
Representative, I understand what you're saying, but this will give you a reality of what's happening in Columbia County. We have an elected county assessor who has six assessors. And we have a tax collector who has two people working with him. And we have a county treasurer, Corrine Carlstrom, who has a secretary. And that is the treasurer's, that is the tax functioning staff, the entire staff of Columbia County. The machine you mentioned would be a marvelous addition to that county. It cannot.
Not what I was suggesting.
Pardon?
That's not what I was suggesting. I wasn't suggesting getting a $500,000 machine for Columbia County. I'm saying, has anybody gone to some other source and said, can you help us out? We got a problem here. You know, is there a more business-like way to go about doing this?
Mr. Chair, my point, there's inquiry, is that when we put something into state law, it's going to apply evenly and equally to 36 counties. And I'm wondering about that.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate your help with us this morning. Representative Hostick of the second issue.
Yeah, the second question has to do with the issue of how counties are compensated for doing the work, if compensation is appropriate for doing the work of collecting and distributing taxes. There were basically two positions. One position is that the counties are, this is a county function that the county should finance out of their own funds. And the other position that this is a service that county provides for other districts, and perhaps it's appropriate for them to get some compensation for doing that service. We discussed if compensation were appropriate. We had a brief discussion on whether that should be a transaction fee per transaction or a percentage of the handle, as it were, a transaction fee being probably inequitable because it would charge the same amount for a large district as a small district and could become onerous on some small districts. Here I'm revealing what I do. And the percentage of the handle is just based on saying 1% or 0.5% or 1.5% or whatever the county handles in terms of the tax collections. Either way, the committee decides to go on this. I think the subcommittee was unanimous in thinking that this should be a topic for the interim joint committee on revenue to study in some depth to try to determine what is fair compensation for counties or how the assessment and taxation function should be handled generally. There, we could range all the way from the existing system to state takeover of the function, but we felt that it's an issue of large enough magnitude that we shouldn't try and resolve it within these few weeks of this legislative session.
Okay, questions on that particular point? Should we try a Representative Schoon, and then should we try to go back to the brief point-counterpoint format again before we try to decide what we want to do with both topics, Representative Schoon?
Well, my question is, don't see how we can put off the decision. Seems like we have to decide either they do or they don't here, and can't wait for an interim committee to make that decision for us.
Representative Hostica?
If we don't do anything, the system continues as it is. That is a decision. There's no doubt about that. So the question is, the point I was trying to make is that I would recommend, this is a personal recommendation here, that if we do decide on some compensation scheme, that we sunset that July 1st, 1987, so that it would force interim work on that issue.
Same scheme?
Excuse my ignorance, Carl, but what is the present scheme? I thought they were keeping interest to pay offset the cost.
That's what's in dispute.
Well, I know, but we can't go with that anymore, can we? In other words, if we resolve the interest problem, then we have eliminated the compensation.
Mr. Chairman.
Same Hostica?
I think that, you know, the question of whether or not they keep the interest is what's in dispute. Even if we determine that they could keep the interest, or we determined that the old law said that they could keep the interest, I don't think it was clearly stated in the law that that was compensation. It was sort of an informal understanding that that was compensation or partial compensation for doing that function. I think that, again, if we look through the procedures county by county, we'll find that some may have actually gone a long way towards covering their costs and some may not have come anywhere near covering their costs through the interest that was handled. There's no necessary connection between the amounts there.
Okay. Any further discussion? Carl, point, counterpoint, how do you want to handle that?
Well, I guess you can take the people who say no compensation.
Okay.
I think I could make the case, Mr. Chairman, that it should be a compensated function. I keep coming back to what I considered an interesting quirk in my first meeting of the County Budget Committee when I was appointed to that, to find out that the amount of property tax that the County, Lane County collected for its own use didn't cover the cost of collecting the taxes. Mm-hmm. That Lane County's property tax, the total amount of property tax it collected for the county, did not pay for the assessment and taxation function in the county. We're an O&C county in Lane County, so we have other sources of funds. But it seemed to be, you know, this is one of those little brief phrases you could give on television that sort of got everybody's interest. And I think that it was, it's curious that that happens and that something ought to be done about that. That in essence, the county taxpayers or the sources of money from the county are subsidizing all the other districts. May be fair, it may not, but I think at least we ought to try to address that question and do something about it.
Mr. Treher?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess part of it comes back, and I'll back up one step and say in my county, certainly the amount of taxes collected by the county doesn't cover the AMT function either. But I think we have to come back to the basic philosophy, and that is, what do we expect county government to do? And, you know, if we say there are reasons for county government, and one of those reasons being the assessment taxation function, just as one of those reasons is the law enforcement function of the sheriff's office, those kinds of things, I think it makes more sense to say that's a responsibility of county government. Now, when you look at it just a little closer and think about it, though, I live in an area where I live in three tax districts. county, you've got the community college, you've got the school district. That's the only three taxing districts I live in. Should the charge on the collection of my taxes be different substantially than someone who lives in the city, where they also have the city and other districts that they're paying taxes to? How do we distribute those costs of collection to the various taxing districts? I think it would be a monumental task to figure out, do we charge so much per thousand per collection, and does it cost more to collect $10 a thousand and $1 a thousand on any given property? There's all kinds of things that this thing creates as far as some problems in just determining. Particularly, I suppose, if you look at it, say that's a county function, they ought to be doing it.
Mr. Chairman. Jim Hugo?
I'm being very parochial today, so but when we'll forgive you.
Thank you.
When the missed gas wells were discovered in Columbia County, those mineral rights belong to the county. The county receives the missed royalties and leases and comes into a segregated account, which is then distributed under 311, 390. Question in the 77, 79, 81, and 83 sessions, among other things, how are you going to compensate the county for monitoring the leases and all that sort of stuff? It used to be the county would charge the account an hourly rate, depending on who was doing the work on what, which worked out to be totally unworkable because it's much like you and I. What do you do during the course of a day, trying to allocate so much, 15 minutes doing this and 2 minutes doing that? 83 session finally said 10% flat goes to the county for administering the fund. Just flat right off the top. And it's worked out fairly well. The county is breaking even on that. But the difference is they're not having to account or to phony up, if you will, hours of maintaining the account. So they take 10 off the top. A second 10, incidentally, goes, second 10% goes into a separate account for impacted areas as a result of the drilling. The remaining 80% plus interest goes out to all taxing districts. It's worked well. The problem is 10% of Multnomah County's receipts as compared to 10% of Columbia County's receipts is a significant amount of money. One solution would be to go back to the old Columbia County system and simply have the mechanism bill the account as a maintenance service fee, and that money would be paid to the county. What we'd be doing, though, is what Columbia County ended up doing, that is creating a billing that's not justifiable or not able to be authorized or not able to be audited. But anyway, that's how the county handled it.
Let me take the prerogatives of the chairman and see if I can thrust forth a position that I would like to use for a departure point for discussion and resolution on these two points, which I think is about 95% of what we have to do to complete until the bill is ready to move to the floor. I concur in both of these points with what the subcommittee brings back. Number one, I'm not convinced that a time limit for posting is necessary. I think personally, I think the counties are operating in good faith and in trying to get that money in the hopper as quickly as possible, and I remain unconvinced that any kind of a time limit for posting is even necessary. So I could support the recommendation that essentially came from the subcommittee of not dealing with that issue in this bill. And secondly, I personally believe that the assessment and taxation function is a county responsibility, and the counties ought to pay for that, and that we shouldn't try to gin up some system for funding the assessment and taxation function in the counties in this bill either. But I'm certainly open to the recommendation made by the subcommittee that it become one of the top-level important interim topics for the 1985-1986 interim. So we'll just thrust forward, certainly not attempting to make a reflection of the committee at this point, but trying to establish a departure point. No more action on time limits, and no more action other than an interim committee study for alternatives for funding assessment and taxation, and move forward at that point. Representative McCracken? And I'll certainly take motions on any motions that you want to make. I just want to use that as a departure point, something to react from. Sam McCracken?
Yeah, I disagree with what you said about assessment being a county function and that they should pay for it entirely philosophically. You know, and I would point to, well, say the elections function of county clerks, where for a long, long time, the charges for special elections have been billed to those districts, and I think it would be reasonable to consider some way to compensate the function of assessment taxation. But I agree with you pragmatically. There's no way that we're going to come up with any kind of workable formula. We cannot pick a percentage out of the air. We cannot have a formula that says, well, fees based on cost, because as Representative Hostica pointed out, you know, the total property taxes coming in, for example, to Lane County wouldn't cover the cost. So, you know, I just don't pragmatically agree with you.
But the bottom line is you do agree, because there's no solution that you can put on table. So,
Mr. Chairman,
I'm saying Burroughs.
Well, I still think they should be compensated. I'm willing to agree on the not doing it on the time frame. I think the subcommittee's done a superb job.
Me too.
And I would not want to leave the Senate without anything to do. I'm willing to go on.
Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion, Representative Hostica?
Well, I would move 2229 to the floor with due pass recommendation.
As amended.
Okay. As amended.
Do you want to speak to the motion before I call on Representative Clory? Yeah. Representative Clory?
I just wanted to move things along.
Well, I'm ready to move along, too. I obviously disagree in thinking that there should be a time frame. I also agree with you, Mr. Chairman, about that's part of the job of the county. Another thought that has not yet been expressed, and that is that you can look at any government entity and start listing things that they do that may be over and above what they were originally designed to do, that they have had imposed upon them, that they do not get compensation for. And those lists would be very extensive, I think, and to single one out and then go through a woe is me. But I think that in your typical leadership fashion, you've come across a good approach that we can all subscribe to, and I will go along with that nicely.
And I must admit that approach that I've come across is carte blanche with the subcommittee.
The lightweight
committee. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair,
let's see. Before we, yes. In fact, were you going to ask for clarification on?
No.
Okay. I'm going to return to the one you sent me a note on. Is what you're going to ask about, or something else? Representative Hanlon.
I just wanted to discuss the two points that the sub didn't come to agreement on. That it appears that we will not be taking action on, but we'll be recommending a due pass without taking action on. Number one. I would suggest that we should have at least a 30 working day minimum, but we'll go along with no time limit in order to pass this bill on. Number two, and it's a point that hasn't been brought out, that is, it appears to me that in distributing funds, the county also gets a share of the funding. And I think between what has been said, that is, it's solely a county function and they should bear the cost, versus the local districts paying a share of the cost, I'd say it falls somewhere in between, because the county benefits also. As a practical matter, I think I'll take the McCracken approach.
Which is a capitulation. What's that, Hostica?
Well, the reason why, Mr. Chairman, the reason why I moved without resolving these questions was, again, a pragmatic approach, since I do have personal feelings that we could and should resolve them. I also was very persuaded by Representative Burroughs that perhaps we can leave the other chamber with something to do on this issue, and if they focus their minds on the questions we couldn't resolve, perhaps those that we could will remain intact. And
could we limit those discussions?
I'm not sure that's the way it works.
Mr. Chairman, I would also suggest that all the parties of interest in this issue now probably understand it very clearly now what questions should be and could be appropriately taken up in other forums.
Before we call for the vote on the motion to send House Bill 2229 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, I want to raise two other small issues. Is there any interest on the part of the committee members to alter that March 23, 1984 date? I support March 23, 1984. Is there any desire by committee members to move off of that date? If so, is there a motion? Representative Trahern?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to try to push it into a motion. I tend to go with the earlier date, with the August date, because it seems to me that's a more logical place, but I'm not. Again, that was one of the compromises, and I'm not going to bloody my nose over it.
Representative Clory?
I'd prefer that date.
Are there three others that would prefer the August date? Okay. One last item. Representative Hugo asked for a clarification on three of the sections or subsections, I'm not sure of which, in the -6 amendments. And I wanted to make certain that the 12% interest was on the damages. Mm-hmm. And we're not certain that that's the exact terminology we want to use. We lost Elizabeth Norman. But let's see, would you accept, let's see, we probably need to, Representative Hostiga?
I guess I would say that that was the intent of the motion that I made to it when we adopted, or when I moved the -6 amendments, and if the staff could clarify that in the language, that would be appropriate.
Okay, is it the understanding of all nine committee members that the on the damages language was intended as a part of the -6 motion?
Yep.
Okay. Anything further to come before the committee on this topic before we call for the vote to send House Bill 2229 to the floor with the due pass recommendation as amended?
I presume.
Representative Burroughs?
I would presume any aye vote means there will be a commitment to do some chatting in our respective caucuses in a persuasive manner.
Correct. Correct. Let's make certain that we take this issue to the caucuses and try to clarify it, because it is something that's very controversial and potentially could be very controversial on the floor if they don't understand what we've done. So let's definitely carry it to the caucuses. I think Representative Burroughs raises an important point. Further discussion? Tilda, please call the roll on the motion.
Representatives Hanlon?
Aye.
Hostica?
Aye.
Hugo?
Aye.
McCracken?
Aye.
Schoon?
Aye.
Trahern?
Aye.
Clory?
Aye.
Burroughs?
Aye.
Troop?
Aye. Motion's adopted. The and let me thank the subcommittee. Yes. Extremely good work. As we worked through it in full committee, you brought us back to the exact same position that that you had arrived upon in subcommittee, and very much appreciate the quality of work. Let's now move to the public hearing on Senate Bill 190. And Senate Bill 190 is a measure that has moved from the Income Tax Subcommittee to the full committee. Representative Burroughs, how do you wish to proceed on Senate Bill 190?
Mr. Chairman, we have divided up the bills that we have passed out.
Oh, absolutely.
Steve will give an explanation, but Representative Hugo also is prepared to represent the subcommittee on this.
Who is?
Steve.
And you guys. That's what I thought you said. Oh, this is locking out the door.
My poor friend doesn't
make it go. Okay. Where is Senate Bill 190 in the scheme of the book here?
Right, oh, there it is. Should be asking me to put that for or at the beginning.
Sure, right? I'm familiar with it. Just after House Bill 2229 under exhibits. Representative Hugo, Senate Bill 190.
Oh, please, Mr. Chairman, let me just reread the bill right now.
Yeah.
Let's see. A major issue of the thing was, a major conflict in the bill or issue we had to resolve was the conference date. You'll notice in the revenue analysis, the second paragraph, changes time to request a conference to 30 days from date of notice instead of a receipt date. We'll find that, if I'm not mistaken, bottom of page 1 on page 2, and then down into lines 20 through 24 of page 2.
looking at lines 34 and 35. The question was, when can you request a conference? And from what point? It used to be from a point of receiving receipt date of the proposed adjustment. Now we're changing that to request conference from 30 days from the date of notice. Steve may want to bail me out of that if that's incorrect, but I think that's the issue in the bill.
Anything further to add, Steve? The bill is, that's an issue, but if I may, the primary purpose of the bill is to reverse the Kent court case decision on how the department can handle refunds. If the department, if there's a refund request on a return and the department wants to make an adjustment to that refund amount, under the old law, the department could go ahead and send a check for the amount that the department determined should be the refund amount with a notice then that the taxpayer has appeal rights to object to the department's adjustment. The court case directed the department in terms of interpretation of the law, saying that the department could not go ahead and send an adjusted amount as the refund check, but would first have to notify the taxpayer that they think an adjustment is being made, and then let the taxpayer decide whether they want to appeal that adjustment before they can receive the check at all. So it's made a delay for the department in processing refund checks, and there's an effective date of July 1, 1985, so that this could be implemented to deal with the HARP refunds in October of 85.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hugo?
As an example, if I, in my refunds, I fill out my income tax, I think I have a refund of $105 due, and the department in auditing it says, no, it's $100. Prior to passage of this bill, the entire amount would be held by the department. Under this bill, then the $100 would be sent, and we could dispute the five. That's essentially the building. And then the 30-day notice period comes from the date of receipt of the check.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Burroughs.
This bill passed the Senate unanimously, and we, the subcommittee, chose, we could not see any need for any further any amendments. It was one of the simpler bills that we had to deal with.
I noticed that there were no amendments made in the Senate.
That's right.
But it was adopted in its original form, passed the Senate unanimously, and in the subcommittee's judgment, there are no amendments needed in the House, but the bill is ready to proceed to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Yes.
Okay.
We'll make that motion,
shall I?
Is anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 190 today? Okay, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1, close the public hearing on Senate Bill 190. Open the work session on Senate Bill 190. Representative Hugo moves Senate Bill 190 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Clerk, please call the roll on the motion.
Representatives Hostica?
Aye.
Hugo?
Aye.
McCracken?
Aye.
Schoon?
Aye.
Trahern?
Let's see. Hold on a second. Let's see if you can call.
And green, yellow, eye. We discussed it in a brief explanation. The first time I ran in defended it,
go ahead and see. We'll let him vote.
Hillary?
Sorry.
Aye.
Hamilton?
Aye.
Schoon?
Aye.
Burroughs?
Aye.
And Troop.
Aye. Motion's adopted. Representative Hugo, would you please carry Senate Bill 190 on the floor of the House?
No.
Representative Hostica, would you please carry House Bill 2229? The next item on our agenda this morning is Senate Bill 181.
Representative Hanlon and Steve will carry the...
Okay. Representative Hanlon, do you want to proceed or Steve?
Yes.
Representative Hanlon.
Senate Bill 181, as it came from the Senate, covered two areas.
Number one, it permits the Department of Revenue to accept credit card payment on delinquent taxes. And number two, it allows the department to assess a penalty for some receiving a check or an NSF check or other payment more than once. The form that came over from the Senate in was a minimum penalty of $100 and maximum of $500. We amended that to make the minimum penalty $25 rather than $100. The other part of this bill that the Revenue Department has requested is allowing inheritance and gift tax to be collected, the same collection techniques to be used in that area that are presently used in collection of income tax. And I would note that that is probably not a major impact since we are in the process of phasing out inheritance and gift tax in the state of Oregon. But they did ask for similar powers as they have in income tax cases. So those are the two major areas